Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf, which is Pesachim Daf Gimel. We are on the last line of Daf Beis Amud Beis and in the midst of a discussion regarding the precise definition of the word Oyer. We seem to have a machlokes between Rav Huna, who says Oyer is in reference to Naghi, which the Gemara presumes to mean daylight. So Oyer means daytime. Whereas Rav Yehuda says Oyer is nighttime, it's Lilo. Says the Gemara Meisvei, we have a Kasha and a Raya to the Shita that says Oyer is actually in reference to night. Marzutra, so he was the one who asked the Kasha from the Mishnah. Hamapelas Oyer Lishmoinim Ve'echad, if Isha, she miscarries on the Oyer, on the night, which is prior to the 81st day from her last childbirth. So we know that an Isha who gives birth needs to bring a korban leida. Now what happens is that the first 80 days, let's say she gives birth to a nekeva, so the first 80 days are called the yemei leida. What happens there? So for the first 14 days, any dam that she would see, she's automatically tamei on account of that. Past that, meaning from the 14th up to the 80th day, so for the next 66 days, any dam that she would see is called dam toyar, which doesn't make her tamei. So in total, we have 80 days, which are called the yemei melois, the sequence of the days of the yemei leida. Now, we learn, Rashi will bring a gemara, that we learn from a pasuk that should she miscarry anytime throughout the yemei leida, throughout the 80 days from the first childbirth, so if she gives birth again, she miscarries, etc., then she doesn't need to bring a new korban. One korban can be applied for both experiences. However, if she gives birth after the conclusion of the yemei melois of those 80 days following the first birth, then indeed she needs to bring a new korban, one korban for the first leida and another korban for the second birth. What happens if she gives birth on the night of the 81st day? We have a machlokes. Now Rashi will give us the background to this halacha. Let's take a look at Rashi inside. From the top of the Amid, beginning with the words Hamapelas or Lishmoinim Ve'echad, says Rashi, Bekrisis Perakama. In the first Perak in the Gemara Krisis, the Kaimelon, we learn from the Pasuk Zois Toiras Hayledes. So the word Toiras is inclusive. So this is the Torah of the Yoledes. This comes to teach us that sometimes many birth experiences can be put into the same, under the same umbrella, and one carbon can apply for all of them. This teaches us that she can bring one carbon for many vlodis. Now perhaps from this pasuk we can also learn that she can bring one carbon for the leida, which takes place before the conclusion of those 80 days, and use that same carbon for the next childbirth experience, which happened after the conclusion of those yemei melois of those 80 days. Is that so? Yochel shatavi al aleda shel lefnei melois v'al aleda shel la'acha melois carbon echad v'lo yoyser, one carbon for both experiences. Talmud loymer zois. Yeah, Toiras is inclusive, but zois Toiras is coming to exclude something. It's a limited dispensation, and we don't apply it to a leida which happened after the conclusion of those 80 days. Explains Rashi, Shem Yolda La'achash Melois. If she gave birth after the conclusion of those days, Kigan Shetava Lois, so if Shvu'ayim, Shal Nekeva, for instance, she went to the mikveh after 2 weeks of the initial childbirth of the Nekeva, Vinis Abra, and then she became expectant again, Vipila, and she miscarried again. So now it depends when that occurred. Im Toich Melois Yipila, if that happened within the 80 days, Nifteres B'Karbon Echad, then one carbon can apply for both. But if she gave birth after the conclusion of those yemei leida, in that case, she was already obligated to bring the carbon for the first experience before the second leida occurred. So what happens there? We separate the two. They're no longer string together. So what happens is Ulla Basaif Malaysia, after she concludes the Imeleda of the second childbirth experience, Tavishte Karbanis, she'll bring two Karbanis, one for the first Leda and one for the second Leda. So that's pretty clear. If the second Leda, the second miscarriage, happens within the sequence of the Yimei Meloitz, within the 80 days following the initial childbirth, then that's included. It's deemed as one and the same. Rambam says it's like she gave birth to twins. So you don't separate the two things, and one carbon can be applied to both things. However, if the Leda took place after the conclusion of the Yimei Meloitz, after the 80 days from the initial Leda had already passed, then certainly this can simply be a separate and distinct experience and can't be connected with the initial experience. What happens if the Leda occurred during the twilight zone? Meaning, nor here nor there. The night which precedes the 81st day. Says Rashi v'mepila leil shel knisa shmonim ve'echad. So that's in between. Why? On the one hand, shekvar avra meloy shelo, the meleda, the 80 days have already passed. It's already past 80. It's already the initiation of the 81st day. So at this point, any dam that you would see would make her tummy, right? She's no longer considered to be within the mei meloy of the first leda. However, when it comes to karbonis, perhaps she hadn't yet fully emerged from that Yimei Melois of the initial Leda. Why? Aval adayin eina ru'i lavas karbon. Because she's not yet roi. She doesn't have the ability yet to bring a karbon. She ain't karbon nishcha bat layla. Because the karbon can't be nishcha that night. So it's not yet really the time for the karbon on that first Leda. So perhaps she hadn't really concluded the initial sequence, the initial Yimei Melois. And we should still consider her as though she's within the first Leda experience, because there was not yet a chiv, a proper chiv carbon. She can't bring a carbon yet. So it's as though the Yimei Melois are still there, are still continuing until tomorrow morning, when the time of carbon comes. And now, certainly, the Yimei Melois have concluded, and whatever happens afterwards is a new experience. But the night before, where it's not yet the Zman of Karban, perhaps she hadn't yet fully emerged with regards to the Karban, obviously. We said that any dam she sees, she's tummy. But when it comes to Karban, she hadn't yet completed the sequence of the main Meloys, because it's not yet the time to bring a Karban. So the question is, do we consider it as part of the main Meloys and can be put into the same umbrella as the initial childbirth, and one carbon can be applied for both experiences? Or do we say, well, she concluded the Yimei Meloitz, it's already past the 80 days, and a new carbon is required for the second childbirth experience? By Machlekes. Let's see the Gemara again. On the top line, Hamapelos Oyle Shmonim Ve'echad, so she miscarries on the night preceding the 81st day. By Machlekes. Beshami Poitim Recarbon, they exempt her from an additional carbon. They say, well, tomorrow's carbon can be applied to both experiences. Ubisil machayvim, they say no, a new carbon is required for the second Leda. Amru beisil beishamay. So beisil turned to beishamay. Maishna or shmoinim ve'echad? Miyom shmoinim ve'echad. Why would you differentiate between the 81st day and the or shmoinim ve'echad, the night preceding that 81st day? You agree with us that if she would have the Hapala, the Leda, on the 81st day, certainly a new carbon is required. How could you split the day, the unit of day, which is night and day together? It's one unit. Generally, we don't split the two things. The same halacha that applies to the daytime applies to the preceding night. So why would you go ahead and differentiate between the 81st day and the night preceding the 81st day? That's number one. And number two, we find that actually there's an equation, there is a hashvah, we equate the two things, the night and the following day. Im shiva le tuma, if the night of the 81st is equated to the 81st when it comes to tuma, she sees dam, she's tummy, it's already past the Yimei Meloy, she has emerged from the 80 days of the Yimei Leda. If she sees dam now, it's no longer considered to be dam toyer, right? So if the night of the 81st has the same din as the 81st when it comes to Tumas Dam, apparently she's already out of the Yimei Leida, Lo Yishva Leida Karban. So why wouldn't it not be equated to the 81st day when it pertains to Aloch of Karban? Why would you differentiate between the night of the 81st and the 81st day itself? So Rashi actually brings that on the first argument. Beis Shammai responded by saying, the kasha was that, why would you split the night and the day? So Beis Shammai responds by saying, look, the 81st day is already a time, a sha'a, shiru'uya, lahaviba karban. It's a time that's suitable for karban. So in terms of the chiv karban, she's already chayiv, and you can't include the next experience within the previous chiv. So that's why the 81st day is different than the previous night, because during the night, as Rashi explained, there's no karban to be brought. So it's not yet the time of avos karban. So in terms of the karbanis topic, the karban context, we consider her to be still within the childbirth experience, because it's not yet a time of avos karban. There's no yet chi, there's no possibility, there's no option of bringing a karban until daytime arrives. Therefore, anything that happens until daytime is still considered and included within the same experience, within the same context, and one karban can be applied for both. That was Beis Shammai's response to the first argument. That's why we separate the night from the day. Continues the Gemara. Okay, now pertaining to our sugya, the Mishnah uses the word oir. Oir shmoinim ve'echad. What does oir mean? Says the Gemara, Mi deka amar beis hillel beis shammai. From the fact that we see beis hillel turns to beis shammai and says, Maishna ur shmonim ve'echad, miyoyim shmonim ve'echad. What is the difference between the ur shmonim ve'echad and the actual yoyim, the day of shmonim ve'echad? Shmamina, apparently, ur, when they say the word ur, urtu, it's a reference to nighttime. That's what they're saying. What is the difference between the ur, the night preceding the 81st, and the 81st itself? Shmamina, indeed, this is a raya, a conclusive raya that oyer is referring to nighttime. Mesve, we have another raya, another kasha. Indeed, that oyer is nighttime. The Brisa says, Yochel yehinecha l'oyer lishlishi. We know that there are karbanas that are eaten yoyim v'layla, the day of the hakrovas karban, and the following night, for instance, a toida. So you bring it on Sunday, you eat it Sunday and Sunday night. And we have karbanas which are eaten 2 days. For instance, Shlomim. So it's going to be eaten Sunday, Sunday night, and Monday. What happens to Monday night? Can you continue eating that Shlomim or not? Perhaps the Shlomim can be eaten even during the following night. The night preceding the third day. Vidinu, says the Gemara, perhaps I can learn it, I can derive this halacha, that the shlamim should be eaten the following night as well, Monday night as well, by applying the following formula. Zvachim necholam liyom echad. We have certain karbanos which are eaten for 1 day, the toida, so it's Sunday and Sunday night. Shlamim necholam shnei yamim. And shlamim are eaten for 2 days, Sunday, Sunday night, and Monday. Mala halon laila achayim. So let's compare the two things. Just as the toida is eaten during the following night as well, Sunday and Sunday night, so the laila following that first day is included in the Zman Achila, Afkan Laila Achayim. Likewise, when it comes to the Shlomim, the following night should be included in the previous day's halacha. So you can continue eating it throughout Monday night as well. Talmud Leimar, no, we learned from a Pasuk that that's not the case. Pasuk says, B'yayim zivchachem yo'achil umi macharas. So the Shlomim is meant to be eaten on the day of the Akrova, and tomorrow, v'anoyse adyoyim, and whatever is left over, adyoyim. So the Gemara makes a drasha that you can eat it up until the end of that day, the end of the second day, that is. B'oid yoyim hu nechal. Only while it's still day can you eat that karban. V'ein nechal or shlishi, but it can't be eaten past Monday, meaning the following night, the night of the third day. Okay, so you can't eat it. So perhaps now is the time to burn it. Noiser is meant to be burnt. Yochal yisarf miyat. Perhaps I'll go ahead and burn the shlamim immediately. Monday night, as soon as the day is over, This Zman Achila expired, now it's the time to burn it. So you don't need to wait until the next morning. And Vidinu, and let's learn it from the following formula, that the Zman of burning begins right now. Why? Zvachim necholin liyom v'layla. We have the karbonos which are eaten for a day and a night, meaning the Torah, Sunday and Sunday night. Liyom v'layla echad. Ushlomim necholin liyom v'layla echad. We have the karbon shlomim, which are eaten 2 days and a night. So Sunday, Sunday night, and Monday. So that's shnei yomim v'layla echad, the night in between Sunday and Monday. So perhaps now is the time to burn it. Ma lahalon techev la'achila shreifa. Just as when it comes to the Torah, as soon as you're finished eating it, meaning as soon as the Zman Achila expires, Sunday and Sunday night is the Zman Achila, as soon as Monday morning arrives, tekev la'achila shreifa. As soon as the Zman Achila is over, immediately go and burn it. Likewise, Af Khan, over here as well, when it comes to the Shlomim, tekev la'achila shreifa. Perhaps as soon as you finished eating it, as soon as Monday night arrives, you're meant to immediately go burn it. Talmud Loimar, no, we learn from a pasuk that you're meant to wait until tomorrow morning. So whatever's left over from the carbon to the third day, meaning to Tuesday, you're meant to burn it. We learn from here, you're meant to burn it during daytime. When Tuesday arrives, that is Zman Shreifa, Biyata Shreifa Balayla, and it's not meant to be burnt at night. And therefore the Shlomim is meant to sit around till the next morning. Then you're going to burn the nois. Okay, now what pertains to our Gemara is, the definition of oir, apparently, in the context of this brisa, is as well referring to nighttime. Midika Omar Yehenechal oir l'shlishi. Fact is, the brisa begins and says, perhaps the shlomim can be eaten oir l'shlishi. Not only Sunday, Sunday night, and Monday, but also the following night, the night of the third day. Alma oir urtu, apparently oir is in reference to nighttime. Shmamina, indeed, this is a conclusive raya that the proper definition of the word Ur is nighttime. Tashma, we have another raya. Ur shel Yom Kippurim. Presumably, we're speaking about the night of Yom Kippur. Mispal Sheva. So Shemana Esrei contains seven brachas, the standard first three brachas, the standard last three brachas, and one bracha in the middle. Umisvada. And he includes the vidui in the Shemana Esrei. Shachris, the following morning as well, Mispalel Sheva, Misvada. So the Shemana Esrei has seven brachas plus vidui. B'Musaf as well, Mispalel Sheva, Misvada. B'Mincha, Mispalel Sheva, Misvada. And there's a Gersa which says, B'Ne'ila, Mispalel Sheva, Misvada. B'Arvis, comes Arvis late at night. Now, due to the Torah, the exertion and the difficulty, as a result of the fasting, as Rashi explains in Yuma, we're more lenient. Mispalel Me'en Shemana Esrei, he doesn't have to go and embark on this long journey of the full Shemana Esrei brachos. Rather, Me'ein Shemana Esrei is sufficient. So Me'ein Shemana Esrei is an abridged version of the Shemana Esrei. We take the first three brachos and the last three brachos, and the middle 12 is abridged and condensed into a single bracha, and that is sufficient for the Arvis at the conclusion of Yom Kippur. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Oyim Mishma Voisa. So he quoted his fathers as follows. Mispalel Shemana Esrei Shleimos. You have to really do the entire Shemana Esrei, 18 brachos. Why? Bepnei Shetzorach Leimar Havdolah B'chay Nadas. Because let's remember, it's Matzah Yom Tov. You have to make Havdolah within the Tefillah. So the Havdolah is meant to be recited in the bracha of B'chay Nadas. So you need a proper bracha, a full bracha of B'chay Nadas to include the Havdolah. Therefore, you can't have the abridged, condensed version. Okay, so what pertains to us is, if we take a look at the beginning of the brisa, Ur Shalem Kippurim, it seems that it's referring to the night time, the night of the beginning, begins Yom Kippur, with the term of Ur. Alma Ur Urtu. Apparently the word Ur is in reference to night time. Shema Mina. Indeed, this is a right. Tashma, we have another right. The Tani Devei Shmuel. We learned in a brisa that was taught in the Beis Medrash of Shmuel. Leile Arba Osar Boit Kines HaChametz Lo'yarnir. B'dikas Chametz, by the light of a candle, takes place when? During the night preceding the 14th day of Nisan. So it's pretty clear that B'dikas Chametz is meant to take place at night, not the following morning. Alma Oir Urtu, apparently. Well, now Mishnah as well speaks about the time of B'dikas Chametz and describes it as taking place Oir Larba Asar. What does Oir mean? The night preceding the 14th day. So apparently there's no question as to the exact time of B'dikas Chametz. It's certainly taking place at night. Ur Larba Asar, mentioned in our Mishnah as well, is referring to nighttime. Elo, says the Gemara, rather, there's no machlekes as to the meaning of Ur, which is certainly nighttime, as we have just proved from four different places. Ella bein Rav Huna, bein Rav Yehuda, de kuli alma Ur Urtu. Both Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda both agreed that Ur is certainly referring to nighttime. So what then is the machlekes? Veloi pligi, and there's no machlekes in essence. It's just a question of semantics. How do we refer to night? Marki Asri, one Amora was using the term which was regularly used in his locale, in his town. Well, Marki Asri and the other one used a term used in his location. Explains the Gemara. Basri de Rav Huna. In Rav Huna's town, Karu Nagi. They would refer to nighttime with the word Naghi. What does Naghi mean? It actually means light. So the Gilead on the side explains that it's a euphemism, like a blind person is called a sagi nor, one who has an abundance of light, of vision. So we want to present things in a positive context, in a positive light. So in Rav Huna's town, nighttime was referred to as light. Uba asrid Rav Yehuda karu leili. In Rav Yehuda's town, they refer to it directly as Lailei, as night. So, all agree, Oyer Larba Asar, Oyer means night. The Gizchamis takes place at night. The question is, how are we meant to call nighttime? Nagi or Lailei? Okay, so in summary, we had four rayas that the word Oyer is in reference to night. We had the Mishnah of Amapelis, Oyer Lishmoyne Be'echad. We had the brisa of the Shlomim, Yochel Yehnechel Oyer Lishlishi, the night preceding the third day. We learned about the tefillah, which takes place Oyer Shalom Kippurim, the night of Yom Kippur. And finally, that the Bdikas Chametz takes place Leile Abasar, which proves that Oyer, mentioned in our Mishnah as well, is referring to that same point of time, the night preceding the 14th day. And the Gemara concluded, indeed, that's the Zman of Bdikas Chametz. There's no question that Oyer Labasar, the word Oyer, is referring to nighttime. Continues the Gemara. So we have the Tana de Shmuel, who tells us that Bdikas Chametz takes place Leile Abasar. So he calls nighttime with the word Leile. So it's an outright term, a clear term. What about our Tana? V'tana didan, my time alay tani Leile. Why doesn't our Mishnah use the word Leile, which is more clear and precise? There's no room for ambiguity. Because perhaps Ur Labasar, as we see, can create confusion. What does Ur mean? Night, day. Why doesn't the Brisa, the Mishnah, simply use a clear term of Leile Abasar? Says the Gemara, you know why? Lishna Ma'al Yudinokat. The Mishnah chose to use a term which is more appropriate, more proper, puts things in a positive light. Instead of speaking about the nighttime, the darkness, the absence of night, of light. The Mishnah uses the word Oyer, which is light, in reference to nighttime. So it's a euphemism again. And it's a Lishna Ma'ali, it's a more appropriate, proper way of speaking. Ukhda Rabbi Shimon Levi, just as Rabbi Shimon Levi told us, the Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, Le'olam al Yotzi Adam, Dover Meguna Mepiv, a person should always make sure not to utter something inappropriate. So here, although the word Laila is not really so inappropriate, it's not bad speech, but the Mishnah, at least in the beginning of the Masechta, explains the Rambam, in the initiation of the Masechta, there's a pasuk which says Pesach Varecha Yor, the initiation, the Pesach of the Varecha should shine forth, should light and should be presented in a positive manner. So the Mishnah insisted on beginning the Masechta rather than using the word Laila, which denotes darkness and absence. It shows the word Oyer, which is light, and certainly it's referring to nighttime, but painting it in a positive light. So Rabbi Shimon Levi tells us one is meant to be careful with his choice of words. How do we know that? We know that from our Torah, Sharei Okam HaKosav Shmoni Oisis. We see that the Torah extended itself, used a roundabout mode of speech, added 8 additional letters, which were really unnecessary, in order to avoid expressing itself inappropriately. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, when the animals came to the Teva of Noach, min ha-behema ha-tahira, so some of the kosher animals, u-min ha-behema she-enena tahira, and likewise from the behemoths which were not tahir. Instead of saying tmeya, which is merely a five-letter word, the pasuk chooses to say asher enena tahira, which is a total of 13 letters. So instead of five letters, you have 13, which is an additional eight letters to avoid saying behema hatmeya. So you see that Torah goes out of its way, extends its speech, adds letters, in order to teach us this lesson, that one is meant to choose appropriate and proper language. Rav Papa Amar Teisha. We find another passage where the Torah added nine letters for this purpose. Shenemar, ki yeh b'cha ish to asher lo yeh tohir mikri layla. There will be a person amongst you who will be in a state of non-tohir due to an occurrence that happened at night, to maskeri. So instead of saying, he'll be ish tomei, the Torah extends itself, asher lo yeh tohir mikri layla, and it's a total of 12 letters, instead of just saying ish tome, which is three letters. Tome is three letters. Instead it says lo yator mikri lailo, which is 12, so it's an additional nine letters. Ravina Amar Eser, it's actually 10 extra letters. Vav de tor, because the word asher lo yator has a vav, so it's a total of 13 extra letters. 13 letters instead of just 3, instead of just tummy, which is 3, so it's actually 10 extra letters. Rav Ach bar Akiv Omar, I have another source for this concept where we find that the Pasuk added an additional 16 letters to accomplish this goal to speak properly. Sheshestri, where do we find that? Shenemar. Ki Omar, this is the Pasuk where Shaul HaMelech asked, where is David HaMelech? Why isn't David coming to the meal? And Yohinesim responded, Ki Omar, because he figured mikrahu, it's an occurrence, bilti toiru, kiloi tor, something happened, he had a tumas keri, which prevented his arrival to the meal. So instead of just saying ki oma mikra tome, the pasuk says ki oma mikra hu bilti tor, hu kiloi tor, many additional words and letters, a total of 19 letters, instead of just saying 3, just saying mikra tome hu, tome, which is 3 letters. So the pasuk chose a roundabout way of describing a state of tuma, rather than just stating it outright. And this again is meant to teach us that one is meant to choose his words carefully and speak appropriately and respectfully. We actually have three examples here. One is in the Chumash Bereishis by the Tevas Noach. And then we have the second pasuk, which was actually in Chumash Devarim. So that teaches us that not only the first four svarim of the Torah, which is the main portion of Torah, is the Torah careful about its choice of words, even in Chumash Devarim, which is essentially Moshe's own words to Klal Yisrael. Okay, it was Baruch HaKadosh, but it's on a different level. It's Moshe's personal words. Perhaps that's different. No, the Pasuk is telling us, no, even there, Moshe Rabbeinu is very careful to choose appropriate words. And then we have the third Raya, where it's actually in Nevi'im. There as well, not only in Torah, even in Navi, we find this care that's taken to choose the right type of words. Tanya Devei Rabbi Shmuel. We learned in a Braisa from the Bismarish of Rabbi Shmuel, teaching us a similar concept. Lo'ilim yisaper odom loshen akir. A person should always choose his words carefully, speak appropriately. And we have three rayas to this effect. Sharei bezov kare mirkav. When Torah speaks about a zov, who's tamei, and we know that if a zov sits on a seat, it becomes tamei tumas moishav, it becomes an avatuma. Likewise, if he rides on something, merkav, that also becomes an avatuma. So when the Torah describes these tumas pertaining to the zachar, the zav, the Torah speaks about both, moishav and merkav. Sharei bezav kari merkav. Ubi isha kari moishav. When it comes to describing a similar tumah by an isha, the Torah finds it inappropriate to speak about the position of merkav, which requires a separation of the legs, which is not sneeze, inappropriate for the woman to do. So therefore, we don't find that Torah explicitly describes the merkav situation by the isha. It only speaks about moishav, and we actually learn merkav from a drasha, but it's not clearly articulated in the pasuk. Why is that? Because Torah is trying to avoid an inappropriate description, because we're meant to choose our words carefully and speak appropriately. V'omer, we have another pasuk to this effect, which says "Vatifcha lashon arumim." You meant to choose the mode of language which is employed by arumim, by wise people. Va'omer v'das sfasai borer milelu. My lips speak words of knowledge, and borer means clean and free of any impurities. So you see, a person is meant to speak respectfully and appropriately. Now, why did he need three psukim? My v'omer, why the additional pasuk? V'chi tema, the answer is that from the first pasuk where the Torah avoided describing the isha's riding, perhaps I would think hanimilu b'deraisa, that only pertains to the actual chumash. The Torah is makvid in its lashon because that came from Hashem. So every word there is chosen carefully. Aval b'derabanan, when it comes to words that the chacham speak amongst each other, perhaps loy, there's no need to be so careful. Now we're not speaking about vulgar language, but the question of choosing this word or that, perhaps it's not so vital and crucial. Tashma, we learn from the next pasuk, va'omer v'atifcha lashon arumim. The pasuk tells you, you meant to choose words properly, the lashon of arumim, of wise men. So see, even when it comes to your own personal conversations, you meant to conduct it in that manner. V'chi tema, perhaps you'll think, and you'll say, hanimilu v'drabonon. From the second pasuk we learn, fine, even conversations are meant to be conducted in this manner, but perhaps it's only when it comes to divrei Torah, where the words carry weight. Aval b'mila da'am b'lev, when it comes to just plain speech, non-Torah discussions, there's no need to be so careful, to speak so respectfully. That's where the third pasuk comes in. Va'omer v'das fasai bar milelu. So just ordinary speech is meant to be clean and pure from impurities. Okay. Says the Gemara, okay, getting back to the Merkav, that the Torah avoids describing the isha's riding on the animal because it's inappropriate, to lack of tznius. Ubi isha l'ksiv v'merkav? We don't find that the Torah references Merkav to an isha. V'ksiv v'tokam Rivka v'narasel. V'tur kavna al-gmalam. The pasuk clearly says that Rivka and her maidservants got up and rode on the camels. Ha'sa meshim be'asusa d'gmalam urchehu. Says the Gemara over there, since she's positioned up on the camel, so it's a high position where there's fear of slipping off if you're going to sit sideways without your legs spread apart, clutching both sides of the camel. So over there, urchahi, indeed it is customary and proper, even for the isha, had a necessity to sit in that manner. Therefore, there's no problem with the Torah describing it. There's no lack of tznius here. There's more of a ksiv. We have another pasuk which says, "Vayikach Moshe es ishtav es banav." Moshe took his wife and sons, "Vayarkivim al hamar," and he rode them on the donkey. So you see the term rechiva, even in reference to a woman, "Hasam mishum banav urchu." In that case, since the pasuk is also describing his sons, where it's appropriate for them to ride in that manner, that's why the Torah just puts them all together in one category: the wife with the sons. Because it's not inappropriate, since when it comes to sons, they may ride in that manner. Says Nora Baksivi Recheves al Hamar. We have another pasuk describing Abigail going towards David Hamelach. She was sitting on the donkey. Recheves, she was riding, apparently in a riding position. How is that? Says the Gemara, Hasa Mishum Biasusa Delelia. Urchu, since it was at night, due to the fear of going out and traveling at night, she might collide into something and slip off the donkey if she sits sideways. That's why it's urchu, it's acceptable to do it in that manner, and it's not considered to be inappropriate. Leka, it wasn't due to the fear of night. However, there was a fear and trembling on account of approaching David HaMelech, and due to that trepidation, perhaps she would slip off the donkey if she's not supported properly and sitting with legs on either side, clutching that donkey. Samer, another pshat. Beisusa David nami leka. That wasn't a factor, the fear from David. Rather, mishum beisusa dahar ika. What type of fear was present? Because she was riding up on the mountain, where it's actually dangerous not to sit properly and support yourself securely on the donkey. And that's why it's considered to be appropriate and not a lack of tznius to ride in that manner. Continues the Gemara. So do you mean to say that we don't find ever a reference to the word Tameh in the Torah? Well, it's surely not so. The Torah is full of references to the word Tamei. So how's that? Tamei is not really so proper and appropriate. Elo says the more, rather, the formula is as follows. It depends when. Not in all cases does the Torah go out of its way to choose proper language. It depends. When both options are equal and the same, there's no need to add words in order to choose proper words. So the Torah chooses a respectful, appropriate mode of language. However, whenever it would require adding additional letters and words, you would have to extend your speech in order to choose respectful and appropriate words. Again, we're not speaking about vulgar language, but choosing more appropriate words than less. In that case, we don't do that because, as we're going to see, speaking clearly, concisely, briefly is also important. So in the case where we would prolong the speech, Mishtoi B'Lashon Ktzara, then the Torah indeed chooses the brief mode of language. Could the Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, just as Rav Huna told his name of Rav, V'Amri La, some say it was Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, Mishum Rav Meir, L'Oilam Yishana Odom L'Tamid Derech Ktzara. A Rebbe should always seek to present his lessons to his Talmud in a short, concise, brief format. It's easier to grasp, easier to retain. So, if it involves prolonging, adding, then of course the Torah will do away with that factor. And that's what we find many times, with the factor of choosing proper language, that's what we find many times the Torah uses the word Tamei, because saying Tamei is definitely shorter than saying Lo Tahar. That answers the kasha. The kasha was, we don't find Tamei in the Torah. Yes, we certainly do, because it would involve adding words, prolonging the speech, which is also has a downside to it. We meant to speak briefly and concisely. So if both choices are equal and the same, then certainly we meant to prefer the Derech Kavod, the more respectful form, but not if it entails adding words. Let's see Rashi inside. Up on top, in the middle of that first line on top of the Amid, says Rashi, Dechi Hadad Ininu. So if both modes of speech are equal and the same, none is longer than the other. Shein Oirech B'Lashin Tzach. The clean, more appropriate mode isn't longer min hamaguna than the less appropriate. Mishtoi B'Lashin Kavod, and certainly in that case, we choose the more respectful expression. However, if it involves adding Kolecha, if it involves adding, in that case, we take the shorter route. Ask Rashi Akasha. If that's the case, V'Hani D'Le'el Ikeim. So why is it that during those psukim mentioned earlier, we find that the Torah did add and go out of its way in order to choose more appropriate wording? How does that fit with this formula? Says Rashi, Lametcha. The pasuk there is simply trying to teach us a lesson, trying to present us with a concept, to introduce us to the idea that a person is meant to prefer more appropriate and respectful mode of speech. So the Torah is simply making that statement for us. But generally speaking, we're meant to choose the shorter route. Definitely don't add to your words in order to accomplish that goal. In fact, Ubushar Makaimis, Siloshan Maguna Vakatsa, we find that elsewhere the Torah chooses less respectful words, as long as it's shorter. For instance, you have Tummy many times in the Torah, and that too is coming to teach us a lesson. La metcha, shishana adam tamid roshim tzar. That person is meant to teach his Talmud in a more brief and concise manner. Why? Because it's easier to retain a lesson which was taught in a concise and brief manner. So the Torah here is teaching us two things, two sides of the coin. On the one hand, one is meant to pursue more appropriate mode of speech, but only if it's not at the expense of being brief and concise. Continues the Gemara. Now we mentioned earlier the pasuk describing Avigail v'Rechevez al Hamar, and the Gemara explained, the Gemara justified it because of the fear of the night time, David HaMelech. Now, apparently, now the Gemara did away with all those explanations. Rather, somehow that pasuk also concurs and fits in with our formula, the one that we just mentioned. And the Gemara is going to explain. It says the Gemara of Kalhecha dechi hadad ininu. So you mean to say, whenever both modes are equal and the same, equally long, Mishtoi B'Lashon Kavod, meant to choose the more respectful mode. What about the Pasuk that we just mentioned, V'Recheves Alachamar? Recheves is inappropriate, and it seems that we didn't really gain much by using the word Recheves. V'Recheves V'Yosheves, the Chiyad Adininu. The word Recheves is a five-letter word, and it's not any shorter than saying Yosheves, which is also five letters. And the Pasuk chooses Recheves, which seems to be less appropriate, describing the Isha as riding. So, according to this formula that we just mentioned, that if they're both equal and the same, as far as length is concerned, then certainly we're meant to prefer Derech Kavod. So why did the Torah choose Recheves? It says the Gemara Recheves Ksiv. If you look closely at the Pasuk, it has Recheves without a Vav, so it's only four letters. So indeed it's shorter than saying Yosheves, which would require us to have five letters, and therefore we take the shorter route. Okay, so in summary, the reason why our Tana uses the term Oyer L'Arba Asar, even though he's referring to nighttime, because he wants to refer to night in a more positive sense, and Oyer is light, so it's a euphemism for nighttime. And we proceeded to the concept of Lishna Ma'ali, a person is meant to choose appropriate, proper wording, and we have several sources. We began with the pasuk by the Tevas Nayach, the animals came. And instead of the pasuk saying Behema Tzmeya, the pasuk added words, Asher Nena Tahira, to teach us that one is meant to be careful with his mode of speech, choose appropriate and respectful language. We have the pasuk which says Asher Lo Yetar, we have the pasuk which says Bilti Tahiru, and Dveir Bishmol taught us a couple of other sources. The pasuk doesn't refer to the Isha as riding. The pasuk says Vativ Chaloshen Arumim. This comes to teach us that even when the Rabbanim are having conversations of Torah, they're meant to speak appropriate language. Svasai Barmi Leilu comes to teach us even when it's a non-Torah discussion, the words are meant to be proper, respectful, and appropriate. On the other hand, the Torah teaches us that one is meant to adopt a Derech Ksari, even at the expense of Lishna Ma'alya. We learn that from Vihi Recheves Alachamar, Recheves is shorter than saying Yosheves. And likewise, we find many times a reference to the word Tameh in the Torah, because it's certainly shorter than saying Loitar. Continues the Gemara with several stories to highlight the importance of proper expression and appropriate mode of speech. We're going to have no less than six stories to illustrate this point. Says the Gemara, Hanu Tre Talmidei, there were these two Talmidim, Davu Yasvi, Kamei Dirav, they were sitting in front of Rav. So after the Shia, which was mentally exhausting, they expressed themselves as follows. Chad Omar once said, Shavi Sinan Haishmaita, this Shir made us so exhausted, Kedavar Acher Misankan, like a Davar Acher, which is a Chazir, exhausted Chazir. Chad Omar, the other Talmud, expressed himself more respectfully. Shavi Sinan Haishmaita, this Shir was so exhausting, Kigdi Misankan, we're now like a weak goat. And what happened? V'lo yishtoi Rav. And Rav refused to converse with that other fellow who expressed himself inappropriately, citing a chazir. The Marik says this went on for 30 days like a nidui. Another incident, Hanu Tre Talmidi, there were these two Talmidim, Davi Yasvi Kamedi Hillel, sitting in front of Hillel, V'chad Minayu, Rabbi Nyochanan Ben Zakkai. And one of them, who's Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai? But Amrila, some say it was Kamedi Rebbe, in front of Rebbe, V'chad Minayu, Rabbi Yochanan, one of them was Rabbi Yochanan. So what happened? Chadama, one of them said, this was the Rabbi Yechman Zaka, Rabbi Yechman, he said like this, "Bipnei ma boitzrin b'tahara." Why is it when they pick grapes, we're meant to use kalim, which are tar, to contain those grapes? So b'tzir is a reference to picking grapes, and the reason is because of the juice which is found on the grapes, which can cause tumah to the grapes. We know that a fruit which becomes moist now becomes hukshal kabatumah. So the moisture makes it susceptible to tumah. That's why you must be careful with these wet grapes and only use kalim which are tar to avoid making them tumah. So why is it when it comes to grapes, we're careful, but not when it comes to olives? Ve'in moiskin b'tahara. When it comes to moiskin, which means picking the grapes, we're not careful. We can use kalim which are not tar. So he didn't say tumah. He said, "Ve'ein moiskim b'tahara." We're not careful about tahara. What about the moisture found on top of the olives? So that was one Talmud way of expression. V'chadama, the other Talmud said, "Bipnei ma boitzim b'tahara." So he posed the question as follows. Why, when it comes to Betzira, we do it with Tahara? Umayskin betumah. When it comes to picking the olives, we do it betumah. So he said it outright. He used the word tummy. And the actual difference is, Rashi explains, because the juice of grapes are considered to be useful and have a din of liquid as opposed to this juice of the olives, which is not considered to be liquid, doesn't have a din of mashke, it's not really, it doesn't really have a purpose and a use. And therefore, it doesn't have the din to be mashke l'kabotumah. So you have two talmidim and two modes of expression. Omar, so the teacher, the Rebbe, responded when he heard both of these talmidim, and he was impressed with the Talmud who was careful to speak respectfully, who didn't outright say the word tummy, and he said, Muftach ani bazeh, I'm sure that this one, Shemoira Harabi Yisrael, he will gain stature, he will occupy a position, a lofty position, and Klal Yisrael be a Moira Ra Paisik. And indeed, that's what happened. V'lo Yehoya Yomim Atam, very few days passed, Achahayra Harabi Yisrael, until this Talmud indeed occupied this great position very soon after this incident. Continues the Gemara. Hanu Tlosa Kahani. There were these three Kahanim discussing the portion that they received of the Lechem Apanim. Chad Amarlu, one of them told the fellows, Higiani Kepul, I got such a small portion of Lechem Apanim, size of a bean. V'chad Amar, Higiani Kezayis. The other fellow says, I got a piece as large as a Kezayis. V'chad Amar, Higiyanik is Navalata. The other one said, look, I got such a small piece which has the same size of as a tail of a lizard. So this was an appropriate way of expression, especially when it's in reference to the karbanais, meant to equate it to a lizard's tail. So the other ones, they grew suspicious of this fellow. Perhaps he's not really a kain, there's something wrong with his lineage. But ku achrav, they investigated his background, umatsubay shemes psul, indeed they found some sort of psul, that he was an apostle, he was born from an appropriate marriage, and he's a chalul. Tesis learns that they found some sort of avodah zara association with him, and he's disqualified from doing that avodah. And this was as a result of his inappropriate expression, which indicated there's perhaps something wrong with him or his background. Says the Gemara, why did they see a need to investigate his yichus? V'ham tanan, haven't we learned in the Mishnah that when it comes to examining the yichus of an isha to make sure that she's not a mamzer, etc., so we check her ancestors up until the point of mizbeach. Ein boitkim na mizbeach olamala. It's only to check. Once you reach a point where you know the grandfather did the avodah the mizbeach, you can be sure he's a miyuchus. So Rashi explains there was a special bezin which took care to investigate the family background of the Kehanim. So once you know that he did service in the Beis HaMikdash, you can be sure that he is a Meyuchas. So this Kohen who was doing the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, he certainly was looked after and properly investigated. Why did they see a need to go ahead and reinvestigate matters further? Says the Loi Teimat Shemetz Psul. Indeed, don't say that it was actually a Shemetz Psul, that he was actually a pasul kahuna, but that certainly wasn't the case. Aleimah shachatz psul, rather they found shachatz, haughtiness in him, which makes him pasul for the avoda. Rashi brings that if a person doesn't relate to the avoda with the proper respect, such as this fellow who referred to the lechem apanim as a lizard's tail, that is sufficient to disqualify him from avoda. So of course the bezin did do a proper background check as far as the yichus, but in this case, since he expressed himself inappropriately and haughtily in reference to the Avodah, that in itself proved sufficient to disqualify him. Same another pshat? Shani Hasam. This case was different. Generally, we don't have reason to assume that a Kohen who's already in the Beis HaMikdash is perhaps a pasul. There's no reason to suspect that. But this case is different. Shani Hasam, the Iyu, the Aron Avshei, he hurt himself. He aroused the suspicion by going ahead and expressing himself in this manner, in this inappropriate manner, which indicated that perhaps there's something wrong with him or his family. And that prompted this reinvestigation into his family affairs. Continues more with another story of misspeak. Hahu Arma, there was this guy, Davasolik V'achel. He would go up to Yerushalayim and he would eat. Psachim Yerushalayim. Even though he was a guy, he would masquerade as a Yid and take part in the Karm Pesach. And then he boasted. Omar, he said, look, Ksiv Kol Banecha Lo Yechaboy. Pasuk says that a guy can't eat. Kol oral can't eat. Vana, look at me. Hoka achil nalok, I ate mishufri, shufri, the best cuts of meat of the Karban Pesach. I beat the system. Amar le Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseir. So Rabbi Maaseir responded to him, Mika safalach ma'alya? Did they give you a portion of the tail of the sheep, which is a fatty, tasty meat? Amar le lo, he says, no, actually not. So he told him, look, kisakas lasam, when you go up to the base of Middash again, Emilu, go tell them, safali ma'alya. Give me of the from the tail. So that's what he did. Kisalik, when he went up the next time, Omar Lusi told him, Ma'al Yisafali, you know what, give me from the tail of the sheep. Omar Lusi, they told him, Al Yilagavoy Yisalk, the tail, that belongs on the Mizbeach, it's not meant to be eaten by us. So now they smelled something suspicious. Omar Lusi, they turned to him and they asked him, Man Omar Lachachachi, who instructed you to ask us this strange request? Omar Lusi told him, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseir, he was the one who told me. He said, look, they're gypping you. They're not giving you the best portion. That's why I demand the aliyah. Amru, so now they said amongst themselves, my haide kaman, what's going on here in front of us? There's something wrong here. Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseir is telling him to ask for the aliyah. There must be some sort of hidden agenda. Batku basrei, indeed, they investigated his background, vashkechu darmohu, and they discovered that indeed he was a goy, v'katlu, and they killed him. Shochlei, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseir. So as a result, they sent a message out to Rabbi Yehuda and they told him, Shalom lecha, peace to you, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseir. The Adven Netzivan, although you're out in Netzivan, which was out of Eretz Yisrael, so far away, but your influence is felt all the way here in Yerushalayim. Umitzadascha prusa, your net is spread out by Yerushalayim, all the way in Yerushalayim to ensnare this goy. So Rashi explains that this story is similar to the previous story, that due to misspeak and inappropriate expressions, this prompted an investigation, just as in the previous case with the Kohen, they discovered that he had a psul. Here as well, they discovered that he was a goy. Continues the Gemara of Kahana Chalash, of Kahana fell ill. Shadru Rabbanon, the Rabbanon sent the Rabbi Shoben Brei Draviti to go check out his condition and report back. Omrele, they told him, Zil B'doik Madine, go check out his condition. Also, so he arrived, Ashiche, he discovered, he saw the Nach Nafshe that he already passed away. Kare Lelevushe, so he tore his garment, but he didn't want them to see. He didn't want his friends to be frightened. So what did he do? Vahadre Lekare Lachari. So he turned the torn portion of his beged to the back, so it shouldn't be seen. Ubachi Vasi was coming along and he was crying, and they figured out what happened. Amrule, so they told him, Nach Nafshe, did he pass away? Amr Lusi told him, look, you figured it out, but I know like I'm not going to say it. U'moitzi diba huksil, one who expresses something inappropriate, he's a fool. So speaking about tragedies openly is foolish. I implied, but I didn't want to say it outright. So here's another example of appropriate mode of speech. One final story. Yoichan Chakuka, Yoichan of this town, Chakuka, Nafak Likuryasa. So he went out to the villages to check out on the grains, perhaps he had some farms to see how successful that year's crop was. He also, when he returned to his friends, Omrule, so they asked him, Chitu Nasu Yafis? Have the wheat produced properly? Omrulehem, so he told them, Sirm Nasu Yafis. He didn't want to answer directly that the Chitim crop were failures. He said, barley was successful. Omrule, so they told him, barley, that's animal food. Sayu Basar, go spread the good news. Lasusim lachamirim to the horses and the donkeys. Techsiv asoirim batevin. Lasusim v'lerechesh. Barley and hay. It's meant to be fed to horses and donkeys. So yeah, we understand that you're trying to present things in a positive context. But making reference to a successful animal feed crop doesn't really accomplish that goal. Says one of my havili lemeimar. When then should he have said? How then should he have indirectly reported regarding this year's failed wheat crop? Says the Gemara, he had one of two choices. Either ishtakat nasu chitin yafis, he could have said that last year's wheat crop was successful, which would indicate that this year's wasn't. Inami, or adoshim nasu yafis, this year's lentil crop was successful, which will indicate that the wheat wasn't. Okay, time for a brief chazar of today's daf. We concluded that when the Mishnah says erlar ba'asar, which is the time for b'digas chametz, it is certainly referring to nighttime, because er is laila, as we proved from four different places. The reason why the Tana used oyer, which denotes light, because he wanted to use a positive term in reference to night, as we learn from many sources that a person is meant to choose proper, respectful, and appropriate mode of speech, whether it's in the Torah, whether even the Darabanan, whether even non-Torah discussions are meant to be conducted in an appropriate manner, provided it doesn't prolong things, because speaking in a short form, Derech Tzara, is certainly a priority over Lishna Malia. And we concluded with six incidents that highlighted the importance of proper expression. We had the Talmud who said, Davar Achar Mesankan, this exhausted Chazir, and he was distanced by his Rebbe as a result. The Talmud that said, Ein Moiskim B'Tahara, rather than referencing Tumah directly, he became a Moira Harabi Yisrael. The Kohen that made reference to the lizard's tail turned out to be a puzzle. The guy who requested from the Aliyah ended up getting killed. Moitzi Dibahu Ksil, one is not meant to speak about tragedies openly. And the unsuccessful wheat crop, which was referenced to by describing the successful barley crop.